We'll call the Planning Commission meeting for January 15, 2019 to order. Could we have a roll call determination of a quorum, please?
Chairperson Sattler.
Present.
Vice Chair Mondroy. Commissioner Borders. Commissioner Doors.
Present.
Commissioner Eswine.
Here.
Commissioner Preston.
Here.
Commissioner Tingle.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Thank you. Commissioner Eswine, would you lead us in the pledge, please? Public comment. The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Planning Commission, including any matters that is not specifically included in the agenda as an action item. Is there any public comment at this time? Come forward, please.
Good evening. My name is Aubrey Rollette for the record, and I just wanted to introduce myself as your newly elected clerk recorder. So I just wanted to put a face behind the name, and you have Tamar, so you're in good hands. But I just wanted to say hello.
Any other public comment at this time? Seeing none, Hope, is there any modification of the agenda?
No, Mr. Chair, there's no modification. However, for the benefit of the audience, I'd like to announce if anybody is here for a variance on Silver Oak, that item is not on tonight's agenda. It will be considered at the meeting of January 30th. It was noticed, but it was removed from the agenda. So for the benefit of the public, I just want them to know in case they arrive tonight for that item.
Going back a little, a review of the minutes and or a motion to accept. Any changes or modifications? I saw one where I think it mentions on the last page about this meeting is going to be at 6 o'clock under directions, director's report from the commission F1. It says will be held January 15th at 6 p.m. I don't know if that's the only thing I saw.
Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to accept the minutes as proposed with the change as noted.
Thank you. We have a motion. We have a second. Thank you. All in favor? Aye. I will abstain. I was absent from that meeting. Public hearing item E1 AB-18-173 for possible action to make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors for the abandonment of a portion of a public right-of-way, a one-foot-wide section from the northern area of West Fifth Street between the easterly right-of-way area of South Curry Street and the westerly right-of-way area of South Carson Street, the total area of 170 square feet. More or less adjacent to properties located at 114 West Fifth Street and 418 South Carson Street, APNs 003-116-03 and 003-116-04. Ms. Green?
Now I'm on. Hope Sullivan, Planning Manager. This request, as the Chair outlined, is to abandon a one-foot section on West 5th Street right-of-way located between South Curry and Carson Street. Jack's Bar, which was built in 1899, encroaches onto this right-of-way. The abandonment of the portion of right-of-way will allow the building to be entirely on private property. The abandonment will not result in any physical change to the street. The curb, gutter, and sidewalk will remain exactly as is today. The Board of Supervisors is authorized to grant an order of abandonment. The Planning Commission makes a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. The Planning Commission's recommendation is based on the 7 required findings. The staff has reviewed each of those findings in the staff report, and we have been able to make each of those findings in the affirmative. Therefore, staff is recommending approval of this request. I'm happy to speak in depth about any of the findings. Also, Angela Foose with Loomis & Associates is present representing the applicant. Thank you.
Any questions for staff? Would the applicant like to come forward?
Good evening for the record, Angela Foose with Loomis. This really is just a cleanup. This is an existing condition that's been there for probably about 100 years. And so this is to clean up something on a map, has nothing to do with any changes to parking or roadway or sidewalks or really the building itself. This is just to make an error better that was an error from over 100 years ago. Thank you.
And you've seen the three conditions of approval, I imagine you're okay with those.
We are in agreement.
Any questions for the applicant? Seeing none, thank you. Any public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission for discussion or a motion.
I move to recommend that the Board of Supervisors approve AB-18-173, an abandonment of a portion of a public right-of-way based on 7 findings and subject to the conditions of approval contained in the staff report.
Do we have a motion? Do we have a second? We have a fresh one. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. As we mentioned, E2 is being tabled or not.
No.
Oh, is that not the one? Okay. I got my one mixed up. Okay. Oh, got it. Item E2, MISC-18-176, for possible action to consider a request for the extension of SUP-15-077, a special use permit to allow a 90-unit multifamily apartment complex district on property zone retail commercial plan unit development RC-P located at 3808 GS Richards Boulevard, APN 007-461-22 and 23. Oh.
Thank you, Hope Sullivan, Planning Manager. On September 30th, 2015, the Planning Commission voted 5-2 to approve a special use permit to allow multifamily apartments and retail commercial zoning at the subject property. The decision was appealed to the Board of Supervisors. On December 17, 2015, the Board of Supervisors upheld the decision of the Planning Commission. As a condition of approval, the special use permit was good for 2 years. On June 30th, 2017, the staff issued a 1-year extension of the special use permit. The applicant is now seeking additional time, citing the lack of available resources for multifamily development. The Municipal Code Section 1802.0808C authorizes the Planning Commission to approve additional extensions of time in the event that circumstances beyond the control of the applicant result in a failure to complete applicable special use permit conditions and commence the use. In making its decision, the Planning Commission must consider the continued appropriateness of the special use permit. Staff agrees that there's a deficiency of resources with respect to construction, and this is beyond the control of the applicant. In order to ensure that this continues to be appropriate for multifamily development, staff is recommending a limitation of 2 years. We believe that in a 24-month period, we're not going to have enough of a change of condition to cause this to be inappropriate, but the staff does not want to go past 2 years in our recommendation. We would also ask that Condition 16, which mandates compliance with the fire code, be removed. It references an outdated fire code. The removal of Condition 16 doesn't change the fact that this project has to comply with fire code. It has to comply whether it comes before you or not. And I think the reference to an outdated fire code just leads to confusion. So I would ask for the removal of that condition. And with that, the staff is recommending approval for a 2-year period, an extension of time for 2 years with the removal of Condition number 16. Mark Turner is the applicant. He is present, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Any questions for staff? Commissioner Tingle?
Hope, is there a particular reason that we are looking at granting an additional time for this instead of having the applicant come back after that two-year window of time and reapply?
Yes, there's a reason. The circumstances and the conditions in this area have not modified to an extent where staff would sit here and say to you, no, this is not the same place that you approved in 2015. This is an entirely different environment, and we recommend that you not extend it. So there will be times when, because of what's happened surrounding a site, the staff may recommend denial. In this case, what's happened around this site is across the street, there's an entitlement for multifamily development. There's been some offices built in that area, and I don't see where anything that's changed since 2015 is enough to cause me to question whether the findings could still be met. But absolutely, there could be conditions where if you go back to your original, the seven findings of fact for a special use permit, those findings were made in 2015, you may say, no, the circumstances that existed in that area in 2015 are not the circumstances that exist here today. It should be allowed to expire, and they have to come back in for a brand new special use permit because we have to revisit all the findings. I hope that answers your question.
And Hope, we had approved a very large complex right across the street. I believe it takes that whole vacant area, correct?
That's correct. Directly across the street, you approved a special use permit for multifamily, and this the one before you today is 90 units. I believe that one was 150 units.
Clarify for our newer members. Any other questions for staff? Okay. Is the applicant present and like to come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Mark Turner here, and I do agree with the findings of staff. And I'll answer any questions if you have any.
So you're fine with taking the fire code, the minor changes they wanted to make as far as?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Codes and standards change every couple of years. That's just part of the business.
Any questions for the applicant?
Chairman Doors, for the record, do you have a start date? In the letter, it says within 12 to 24 months you're expecting to be able to move forward. Do you have any sort of tentative date you're aiming for?
Not an exact date, but we're hoping to, by the end of this year, be able to start moving forward on that.
Commissioner.
Elise Monroy, for the record. Just to clarify, it says that the project hasn't moved forward because of lack of resources. Is it just workforce? You don't have the workforce to build?
Basically, what you're looking at is a demand level on the workforce that has created pricing that's over the top for our market, and that's probably explanatory as to why you've only seen a handful of apartment units built here in Carson City during one of the biggest economic expansions in real estate that Nevada's ever seen. So, yeah, after the recession ended, a lot of the resources that were here in this state kind of disappeared. And they didn't come back. There's really no place to draw them from because every other market in the West Coast is booming as well, so we can't steal workers from Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, or anything like that. So it's been difficult for everybody in the construction business to staff their organizations to the extent that they would like.
Any other questions? Commissioner Tingle.
So not only are there workforce challenges, it's my understanding there are also some product or material resource challenges as well.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. Materials have actually improved a little bit just in the last 6 months. Lumber hit like an all-time high about 8 months ago, and it's dropped by about 40% since that time. So that's going to ease up a little bit. I think you're seeing the end of the multifamily construction cycle in larger markets have drawn a lot of these workers to Seattle, San Francisco, Portland. The big cities where they're building really, really large multifamily projects, and the attention of the multifamily-sized subcontractors are focused on that.
Sorry, one couple more things. I noticed that in none of the material that we have is anything addressed as far as the schools, the impact on schools, student population, or the impact on primary care provider resources, because we all know there is a shortage of primary care providers in this community, which I don't see changing anytime in the near future. I know there is a couple of bills that are going to be introduced to the legislature this session that hopefully will address that, but there's no guarantee that those will be approved. And there is no nothing in the works that I'm aware of to increase school population as far as like high school, a new high school. I know there's some talk about additional elementary schools or middle schools, but I think that any kind of development that we're talking about right now is going to impact those two sectors, and we don't do a lot to address that. And I realize that you are not in any position to address that either, but that's just a concern that I have in those two areas, that there's a challenge there.
Yeah, we appreciate that those thoughts, and also agree that we'd like to see, you know, the ability to expand resources in those areas as well. I know the people in the medical business are always trying to recruit more people to our area, but they're in short supply too, and the changes to the environment that doctors have to work in the last 10 years, I think, has probably not added incentive for people to rush into the profession, so they're competing for fewer professionals that are out there.
For staff, I believe anything with development or whatever hope is usually the school district is made aware of, et cetera, every item that comes before us.
This project was entitled prior to my tenure in Carson City, but during my tenure, we 100% are constantly communicating with the school district, so I can't speak to what level of communication occurred in 2015.
Thank you. Any other questions for staff or the applicant? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Public comment. At this point, we'll take any public comment on this item. Any public comment? Seeing none, we'll bring it back for further discussion. Or
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion. Oh, here we go. I move to extend the expiration date of SUP-15-077 to December 17, 2020, subject to the removal of condition 16.
You have a motion. I'll second that motion. Moving on. E3, SUP-18-182, for possible action to consider a request for a special use permit to expand the existing Carson Tahoe Hospital Medical Center by adding 6,600 square feet to the existing emergency department, adding approximately 21,000 square feet of floor and area to the lower levels of the medical center to house support services for the hospital, adding approximately 1,625 square feet to Sierra Surgery Hospital, and connecting the surgery hospital with the medical center building with an enclosed pedestrian walkway over Eagle Valley Creek. The subject property is located at 1600 Medical Parkway and 1400 Medical Parkway, APNs 007-531-37, 007-531-38, and 007-531-40.
Thank you. Heather Ferris, Associate Planner, for the record. As the Chair noted, the request before you this evening is for a special use permit for the expansion of the existing Tahoe Medical Center and the Sierra Surgical Center buildings. The subject parcels are located in the retail commercial zoning district, which allows hospitals subject to a special use permit. So the expansion would also require a special use permit. The existing hospital and surgery center received approval of their respective special use permits in 2003. The hospital, in its current state, is a four-story facility, approximately 344,000 square feet in size, and provides typical hospital services such as emergency services, surgery, imaging, lab, pharmacy, cafeteria, and administrative and support services. The surgery center is located approximately 380 feet south or southwest of the hospital across Eagle Valley Creek. The facility is approximately 51,500 square feet in size and provides surgery, imaging, and support services. The proposed project includes construction of a 6,600 square foot addition to the existing emergency department, a 21,000 square foot addition to the lower level of the hospital for lab facilities and support services, construction of an enclosed two-story pedestrian walkway connecting the two buildings, construction of a 1,625 square foot addition to the Sierra Surgery Center, as well as site work to accommodate the changes. Some of the site work includes modifications to fire access roads, modifications to the ambulance drop-off area, and modifications to the parking lot, including increasing the on-site parking. Additionally, the three parcels that are affected by this would be merged to alleviate any concerns that there might be with setbacks. While we're on this slide, too, I'd like to touch a little bit more on the parking. The city's current development standards require that parking for a hospital facility be determined either through the master plan or as indicated in the Institute for Transportation Engineers Parking Generation Manual, or the ITE. Since the 2003 special use permits use the ITE, we're continuing to use the ITE today. The current parking ratio for hospitals is 5.5 spaces per bed. The existing hospital and surgery center have 868 parking spaces associated with their uses, which is just under the 5.5.
Is that 5.5 per bed or like 5.5 per inpatient bed? Because there's like beds in the ER and then there's also beds in the inpatient part.
It's 5.5 per bed, not the inpatient. So there's 953 spaces in the proposal, bringing the parking ratio up to 5.99 per bed. So these next two slides show the proposed elevations of the expansion of the two facilities as well as the connectors. The architecture will be in keeping with the design, building color, and building materials of the current facilities. The hospital had received approval for an increase in height from 45 to 65 feet in 2003, but the expansion and the connectors will be at or under the 45-foot height limit. A few last points to touch on. The traffic generated from the expansion will be well below the threshold for requiring a full traffic impact study. That threshold is 80 peak hour trips per day. Or 80 peak hour trips or 500 or more trips per day. The expansion is estimated for a total of 14 peak hour trips and 174 trips per day. And that's just the expansion, not the hospital in its entirety. Water usage is expected to increase by only approximately 1,812 gallons per day, bringing the water usage up to 42,471 gallons. Which is well below the 126,000 gallons that was approved back in 2003. As you know, there are seven findings of fact that the Planning Commission must make in the affirmative in order to approve a special use permit. Staff was able to make all seven findings and is recommending approval subject to the conditions included in your staff report. We did have some changes to condition 12 for clarification. A memo has been provided to you with the new proposed language, and staff proposes condition 12 read, the conditional letter of map revision, CLOMAR, must be completed prior to issuance of building permit for the bridge connector. The improvement plans for the channel improvements and bridge connector must include phasing such that the channel improvements occur prior to the construction of the portion of the bridge that spans over the channel. Angela Foos is representing the applicant, and she's here today and may wish to, I believe actually she has a presentation for this item, and I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Questions for staff? See none. Would the applicant like to come forward? Before we start the presentation, would the changes of the conditions of approval are all accepted by you folks?
Here we go. Good. Good evening, Chair. Again, for the record, Angela Foos with Loomis. We are in agreement with that revised condition. We did have discussions with staff, and everyone's comfortable with that revision. I'm going to just do a really quick PowerPoint presentation to kind of walk you through some of the changes, maybe at a slower pace, and then answer any questions that you may have. So as was discussed, this is the site plan. We have the main building there, the Carson Tahoe Health Building, and then we also have the Sierra Surgery Hospital. And so there's really four pieces to this application. And if you can see, I just added two red dots there. So that would be the emergency department. We're going to add 6,600 square feet to the emergency department. And then there on the south side of that main building, we're adding 21,000 square feet. And then to the Sierra Surgery Hospital, which is that separate building on the very south side of the campus, we're adding about 1,600 square feet. And then we're connecting the two buildings. So no longer when patients are in the surgery facility and have to go to the hospital, will they have to be transported by ambulance. Now we can actually get them from one building to the next through the connector. And that works as well for visitors that are coming in for doctors as well. So it's definitely going to make the campus flow much better. Overall, it just makes it more of a connected and definitely a pedestrian-friendly type of campus. So just to highlight again, this is the emergency room. We are adding some buildings, adding a portion of square footage on the north side and on the west side. And then on the south side of that main campus, that's what it looks like now, that picture on the bottom. And then that's where we're going to be adding additional square footage. That white block is where the pedestrian walkway connection will tie into that main building. And then on the Sierra Surgery, we are adding, it's really just a small piece, about 1,600 square feet, and then we're providing the connection, that walkway from building, the main campus building to the Sierra Surgery Hospital. So overall, like I said, the flow is much better from a user perspective. You're not going to see a whole lot of changes. A lot of these are going to be internal, more for services. The lab area will expand, the place where the nurses and the doctors will have their separate areas. So a lot of the patient areas, you won't see a lot of changes, except for in the emergency department, you will see some beds being added. But other than that, the general layout of the hospital is going to be the same in terms of what the public's going to see and feel. And then this is just a nice 3D rendering to give you an idea of where that connector ties in with the two campuses, the two buildings within that campus. So you can see ultimately how all of the looks of the existing building architecture and the proposed building architecture really all tie in together. And that connector is going to be a great place where people are walking through and they have windows. So you get great views of the mountains looking to the west. And it's more of an inviting place. So again, you don't feel like you're walking down this corridor. You don't feel like you're in a sterile hospital. It's meant to be an inviting place for people that are at the hospital, either there as patients or as visitors. And that concludes my presentation. We do have the architects here in the office, as well as Michelle Joy, who is the COO of the hospital, if you have any specific questions.
Questions for the applicant?
I had the unfortunate circumstance to be at the ER on Saturday, and there's already construction going on. Is that in the ER?
That could have been tied to some more of tenant improvements to the building. This is for the special use permit purposes. There's no construction tied to what we're proposing as part of this, but it could have just been ongoing changes going on within the hospital.
Other questions for the
applicant? I have a question. The the 21,000 square foot addition, is that going to be above that retaining wall that where the I guess there's a walkway there.
It kind of daylights on that south side of the building.
Are you going to just you're going to dig out towards the building and then bring it out?
Right. Yep. So it'll be an expansion going south of basically where the building sits now. It'll be closer to where the drainage channel is now. Uh-huh. It'll go towards that, and it will tie in. So engineering-wise, it fits in better with how that area is designed with the building.
So you're going to excavate a good portion of land in there.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
I was just curious from looking at it, you know, exactly how you're going to do that.
Mm-hmm. And it, like I said, it'll serve more like a daylight type, right. If you think of like a daylight basement.
Because right. Now that wall is just a retaining wall, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? There's no building or anything behind that.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions for the applicant? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Doors, for the record, I move to recommend.
Whoa.
Oh.
Actually, I do have another question.
For the applicant?
For staff or the applicant. Okay. It has to do with the letter of map revision. Are you actually going to make modifications to the channel, or is that staying the same?
Thank you again for the record, Angela Foos. The process at hand right now is we will be making modifications to the channel. It's about a 30-foot wide channel. It's about 5 feet deep. So we do have to make some improvements to that channel. The CLOMAR and LOMAR process is outlined that you first go through Carson City, and they approve the plans. They review and really concur with the plans, and then they go to FEMA for review. So where we're at in the process now is Carson City has reviewed them. They are now in review with FEMA, and then FEMA has come back to us with some comments, so we kind of go back and forth. Then we actually make the improvements, so we do the construction, and then we go back and we go through that LOMAR process, which is the letter of map revision after construction is complete.
Thank you.
Public comment on this item. Anyone from the public wish to make comment on this agenda item? Seeing none, we can bring it back for discussion or a motion.
Take two. Alex Doors, for the record. I move to approve SUP-18-182, a special use permit request to allow for the construction of an expansion of the existing Carson Tahoe Medical Hospital, expansion of the Sierra Surgery Building, and the connection of the two facilities via an enclosed pedestrian walkway based on the findings and subject to the conditions of approval contained in the staff report.
We have a second.
As amended.
We have a second from Commissioner Monroy. Mm-hmm. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none. Public hearing matter E4-ZMA-18-180 for possible action to make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors regarding a zoning map amendment for a zoning change from retail commercial RC to general commercial GC on a portion of APN 002-061-34. The subject property is located at 2203 to 2223 North Carson Street, Hot Springs Center.
Thank you. Heather Ferris, Associate Planner, for the record again. As the Chair noted, this is a request for a zoning map amendment from retail commercial to general commercial for a portion of the subject property. The site is currently zoned retail commercial and is located at the northeast corner of North Carson Street and Hot Springs Road. And as you can see from this slide, the majority of the surrounding properties are retail commercial and general commercially zoned. The Board of Supervisors is authorized to approve a zoning map amendment. The Planning Commission makes recommendation to the Board. There are three findings of fact the Planning Commission must consider in forwarding a recommendation on a zoning map amendment. They include compliance with the master plan, compatibility with adjacent land uses, and impacts on existing or planned public services. The first finding is compliance with the master plan. State law requires the zoning be consistent with the master plan, and this master plan designation is community, regional, commercial. The surrounding properties also have the same designation. The intent of this designation is to allow for a mix of retail services. There are several zoning districts that are consistent with this master plan. They include retail commercial, general commercial, neighborhood business, and tourist commercial. The applicant is proposing general commercial zoning for a portion of the property, which will maintain consistency with the master plan and allow for a wider variety of uses than is currently allowed in the retail commercial zoning district. The second finding is compatibility with adjacent land uses. Staff was able to make this finding. The site is comprised of three buildings. The two along North Carson are restaurants. Denny's is at the corner of North Carson and Hot Springs, and Jimmy John's is at the northwest corner of the property. The proposed amendment would maintain the retail commercial zoning in the area of the existing restaurants along North Carson Street, which is consistent with other properties that have frontage along North Carson. The building to the rear of the property is a strip mall type building, which houses a daycare facility along with a few other retail uses and some vacant storefronts. This is the area of the parcel proposed for general commercial zoning. The retail commercial zoning is limited primarily to uses such as offices and retail sales of new merchandise. However, general commercial expands those uses to allow for retail and wholesale sales of new and used materials, repair and service facilities, and offices. This amendment would extend the general commercial zoning that is located to the northeast of this property and maintain consistency with the surrounding land uses. The third finding is impacts on existing or planned public facilities, and staff was able to make this finding as well. The site is already developed and includes public services such as water, sewer, and storm drainage. Any new projects in the future would require additional review, including impacts on public services. Staff is recommending approval of the zoning map amendment. The applicant, Glenn Burge, is here and may wish to address the commission, and I'm available for questions.
Questions for staff? Mr. Esselin.
Is it standard not to do a survey to delineate the line of separation between the zoning districts?
I don't know of a mandate to survey. I know for example, Lumber Ranch, we had a lot of rezonings there, and those were not surveyed lines. So I don't know I can't speak to a really long practice, but the recent practice has not been to mandate a survey.
Okay, but Lampa Ranch, was that on a single piece of property, or were those multiple parcels?
It yielded split zone parcels.
Okay, thank you.
That you referred to as a third building, that building actually is where there's multiple buildings. Offices, etc. There, I believe there's a daycare we approved in there a year or
correct.
Two ago.
Yes.
Okay. And I kind of see the way the existing zoning was kind of just coming down and keeping everything a ways back, all in the retail commercial, rather than the GC. But then when we asked after meeting with staff, I asked to see what the retail in general just adds some more things to retail that's already there. So, anyway. Thank you. Other questions for staff? Would the applicant like to come forward, please?
Good evening, Glenn Burge. I support the staff's conclusion and happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the applicant? Seeing none. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
this point, we'll open this for public comment. Is there any comment on this item? Seeing that, we'll bring it back for discussion or a motion. Okay. Mr. Preston.
I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of ZMA 18-180, a zoning map amendment to change the zoning from retail commercial to general commercial for a portion of property located at 2203-2323 North Carson Street, based on the findings contained in the staff report.
We have a motion. We have a second from Commissioner Tingle. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none. Okay, motion carries 6-0. We're going to take a 5-minute break, or whatever, approximately 5-minute break. E5, TPUD-18-010, for possible action to consider a request for a tentative planned unit development that would create 156 multifamily units consisting of 3 fourplexes and 18 eightplexes, as well as 137 single-family home lots. The multifamily development will be on land zoned multifamily apartment, MFA, and the single-family homes will be on land zoned single-family 6000. The subjected property is east of Interstate 580, west of Airport Road, and south end of Wampa Lane, APN 010-041-75, 010-036-05, and 010-542-01. Hope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hope Sullivan, Planning Manager. Stephen Pote, Development Engineering, and Dan Stuckey, the City Engineer, are present, but we have some other guests from the city staff. Dirk Goring from our Transportation Department is with us tonight, and Vern Cron from our Parks, Recreation, and Open Space are with us tonight. And depending how hard your questions get, they may have to step up to the bat. To the plate. Anyway, so Carson City Municipal Code 1802. No, I'm reading the wrong one. Okay, here we go. The subject property is a 41.6-acre property located at the south end of North Wampa Lane, bounded to the west by Highway 580 and to the east by Airport Road. The northern portion of the site is zoned multifamily apartment, and I have the zoning map up for you, and the southern portion is zoned single-family 6000. The proposed development includes two parcels owned by Carson City. I have those up on the board outlined in pink. One is a 0.72-acre parcel, and one is a 0.13-acre parcel. You'll notice in the conditions of approval that I am requesting that this not be considered by the Board of Supervisors until there is formal approval by the city to utilize these parcels in the development. Right now, the city engineer has authorized review of this project by the Planning Commission, but we do need formal approval before we go to the board. So that's in the conditions of approval. The tentative planned unit development is for multifamily development as well as 137 residential lots. So we're going to go back to basics for a minute. What's a planned unit development? Planned unit development essentially authorizes flexibility in dimensional criteria, but you cannot increase the density. With a planned unit development, you're required to have a 20-foot perimeter setback and allocate 30% of the land to open space. The applicant, in terms of dimensional criteria, is proposing a minimum lot size of 3,500 square feet, a front setback of 15 feet, a rear setback of 10 feet, a side setback of 5 feet, and a street side setback of 10 feet. The allowable density in the zoning district is 8 units to an acre. The applicant is proposing 5.5 units to an acre. So although we have a reduction in lot size, we are within the parameters in terms of density. vehicular access to the project is from North Lompa, it's from North Lompa Lane to the north, and there are three points of access on Airport Road: Gordonia, Desatoya, and the third location on Airport Road. The Gordonia access is important, and you'll see with the multifamily development, because of the lack of specificity, I'm recommending that that not receive an entitlement this evening. However, the connection at Gordonia is important, and we worked with the applicant to obtain that connection. If you go to the east down Gordonia, there's a school. And so with this development, we'll have the connection at a point where there is a stop sign, they can incorporate crosswalks, and you can walk safely to school. The three-acre park, which is required as part of the specific plan, will be accessed from Airport Road. Based on the traffic analysis, staff is recommending roundabouts at the following intersection: Desatoya Drive and Airport Road, Buddy Way and Airport Road, and Fifth Street and Airport Road. This property is part of the Lompa Ranch North specific plan. What I have up on the board right now is the land that incorporates the Lompa Ranch North specific plan. The commission has looked at various portions west of Highway 580. This is the first time you've had a review of the specific plan area that's on the east side of the freeway. The specific plan was adopted on March 17, 2016, and encompasses 251 acres. The plan itself addresses design standards, parks, open space, trails, sanitary sewer, water services, stormwater management, utility services, roadways and traffic, fire protection, police protection, and schools. The applicant is proposing to utilize the architectural, landscaping, lighting, and fencing standards from the specific plan. The specific plan also requires a trail system and a three-acre park to be incorporated into the Lompa East development. And this is incorporated in the applicant's plan. The specific plan, as I mentioned, includes development guidelines for multifamily development. In my opinion, the plan before you in terms of the multifamily development does not provide the specificity necessary to determine compliance with the master plan. So if this is not entitled, what that will mean is when the multifamily project comes forward, it will be subject to what's called a major project review. Staff conducts that review, and it would then could pursue a building permit after that review. The project is also subject to a development agreement that was adopted on November 16, 2017. This development agreement includes provisions for a $1,000 unit fee to address impacts to the city, the reservation of a 10-acre site for a school donation of $1,000 per unit, provisions for the dedication of lands for parks, and provisions for parks improvements and maintenance. Staff has been working with the applicant for a year on this project, which is why so many of my colleagues are here tonight. The primary focus in this last year have been transportation, stormwater, and the three-acre park. In terms of the critical components that the staff's worked with the applicant on in terms of transportation, is the extension of Lompa Road from the south to Airport Road. So you'll see in the proposed plan, Lompa Road will connect. It will continue where it dead ends right now, and it will create a linkage to Airport Road, which is consistent with the classification by the Regional Transportation Commission. Also, as I already mentioned, the intersection at Gordonia. That was not on the original plan we saw a year ago. We worked with the applicant to get that connection so that we could have crosswalks where the stop sign is and children could cross the street to get to the school. In terms of stormwater and floodplain, This was also, it took a year to work through this. Where we've ended up is you have a lot of conditions of approval. And the chairman said to me, why are there all these conditions of approval? And I said, we've been working on this for a year. We got to where we could recommend approval. It's a difficult site from a stormwater perspective. So some of the conditions I want to highlight are, one, if the detention is not utilized on the site, a drainage study has to demonstrate the ability of downstream drainage facilities to handle increased runoff. So drainage is critical on the site. We do not want to adversely impact any downstream neighbors. You have in your late material the letter from Jeff House's firm. And we do have condition 60 that says they have to follow the flood management mitigation plan as presented in the November 30th, 2018 letter from House Mooring Consulting. And third, they'll need to, and we talked about this two items ago, but they'll have to prepare a CLOMAR that is approved by FEMA prior to approval of any construction permits. I will mention there's an error in condition 65. It references a landscape maintenance district. It should be a landscape maintenance association, so that the condition will say that landscape maintenance association or a homeowners association will be responsible for maintaining the private storm drainage infrastructure. So I will ask that the commission, should you approve this, include that modification to condition 65. In terms of the park, I will mention the right now the Parks and Rec Director is considering programming this for a dog park, particularly given its location right across from the animal shelter. So in terms of the park, what we worked with the applicant on is to make sure it was a 3 acres of contiguous property. We didn't want it spread out in different sections that would accommodate off-street parking and not include any stormwater facilities or wetlands. So the idea was to make this a facility that was indeed usable, not someplace where the water was going to be captured, and it would include on-site parking so that people could bring their dogs there. You will see in the conditions of approval, I want to highlight these as well. Our health department stayed very active in this review because of their responsibility for vector control. You have an area on the southwest portion of this property that is treated with a helicopter in terms of spraying for vector control. So the health department wants to make sure there was a disclosure regarding the mosquito abatement that's utilized on the adjacent property. And the Parks and Rec Department has requested the inclusion of a disclosure regarding the proximity of the city corporate yard, the public dog park, the wastewater treatment plant, the animal shelter, and the Nevada State Prison. So those are just some highlights of how we got here today. I mean, we've been at this for a long time, and the applicant knows. And but we are prepared to recommend approval subject to the conditions and with the modification to condition 65 that the landscape maintenance district becomes a landscape maintenance association. I've just been very brief, but you have a lot of people here to answer questions. Mike Raley is representing the applicant, and I'll answer any questions that the board may or the commission may have.
I hope the school district was obviously contacted with this. Was there any response?
The school district was contacted because the development agreement that the school district was a party to is included in the in is the school's a beneficiary via that development agreement, so they did not request anything additional that was outside the development agreement terms.
Because on the others we did for the LOMPA before, they were contact. I mean, they made a presentation on that, I believe, at that time, correct?
What you had was you had a tentative map for Ryder Homes on the west side, and at the time of the tentative map, the conditions or the phasing plan and the conditions of approval for the phasing plan were part of that tentative map. So they kind of went in parallel. And at the meeting where the board approved that tentative map, they also executed the development agreement. So you didn't see the exact development agreement because that went directly to the board. But on every single residential project we have, I contact the school district, and I am always making them aware of exactly what's coming before you.
I just wanted to make sure that was on the record. Thank you. Other questions for staff? Commissioner Tingle.
So if you could do the math for me here, for the $1,000 per unit for the school and the $1,000 per unit for, what's the other?
Police
for police fire. What does that total for this particular development?
37 for the homes. I don't know about the bottom.
We're not entitling the multifamily, so you'd just be looking at 137 times 2,000. 138 times, so what's that give me? 138 times 2,000? Okay. You're talking. 138?
So apartments and
approximately about 275,000.
So apartments and multifamily normally are not included in that, or just the way this is set up, it doesn't work that?
The multifamily will be included, and in the multifamily, they too will pay the $2,000 per unit. But because the multifamily is not being entitled as part of this review, I didn't include it for Commissioner Tingle.
But in theory, if those fourplexes or eightplexes went, that additional would be there, depending on the design. Okay.
Correct. And just to go back to the lump, everything within this project site that you're looking at on the board, every residential unit will pay $1,000 to offset the cost to the city for providing services, and $1,000 to the school district. And in addition, there's a 10-acre site on the west side that's being reserved for the school district. I have invited the school district every single time to comment and to make requests, and I bring those requests forward as they come in.
And there is also money's hope, I believe, for the commercial areas as well will contribute some one way or the other.
Right, not to the school because there won't be a school impact, but you're right to the for the city impact.
Commissioner Tingle.
So as far as the flood abatement, no problem with that. The issue isn't always the above ground water issues. Sometimes the water table has a tendency to rise, and if that is not mitigated, which I don't know how you would mitigate that, believe me, because I live in the Northridge subdivision, and there is, I'm sure, there at the time they developed that, there was a flood mitigation, but I'm on my third sump pump underneath my house because of the water table rising, and that's not something you can mitigate, and even if you do slab on grade development, you still have a problem, I believe, with settling and water issues. So this is a marshland currently, and unless they're going to be bringing in some topsoil and doing some mitigation as far as that goes, how do you deal with that? Because I know there was a class action lawsuit where I live, where they settled it because they did not do what they needed to do in order to prevent that from happening. So just a concern that I have when we talk about developing that particular area.
Stephen Potato, Development Engineering, for the record. So just to address that, we will be requiring a final geotechnical study, and one of the things they look at in those studies is the groundwater elevation, and those do change from season to season. So we are limited by when they actually do the study, but also those engineers are bound by a code of ethics. They know the history of the area and whatever experience they have, and they also go back through other geotechnical studies to take that into account. So.
Other questions for staff? Seeing none, would the applicant like to come forward, please? First off, with the modification of 65, are you in agreement with the 81 conditions of approval?
Yes, we are. Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. For the record, Mike Raley with Rubicon Design Group, here representing the project applicant. Jamie Yoshizawa, the project applicant, along with Edgar Leon, the project engineer, also with me tonight. I think the staff report is very thorough and hope kind of hit the highlights. This has been a very long process, as she mentioned, getting here. We've worked closely with a lot of city departments as well as the school district, kind of with the overall Lompa Ranch specific plan. And I think this is actually kind of an exciting thing because it serves to implement the specific plan that was adopted here a couple years back, and some of you remember were on this board when that came through. And some of those highlights, I think this is going to generally improve some of the traffic flow issues over there with the extension of Lompa Lane to the south. It will protect the environmentally sensitive areas and wetlands, put those into permanent open space, provide trail connections that will implement the goals of the master plan as well as the specific plan, which I think one of the exciting things when this is all done that the kids will be able to walk all the way to the high school without crossing any major streets. They'll be able to get over to the high school. I think it's huge for the community. The 3-acre park, we worked when we did the specific plan with the Parks and Recreation Commission and identified that a dog park was a priority. That will bring this to fruition and really be a community benefit. Like I say, we are in agreement with all the conditions, and we're happy to answer any questions you might have.
Minor thing on the dog park, will the dogs be fenced like out by Costco, or will the kids be fenced like over by my house?
I'm going to actually let Vern, because the Vern would know what the Parks Department preference is on that.
I live over on Fremont Street in our park. At the end there, the kids and the swings are in the enclosure, and the dogs have the whole rest of the park, so I was just curious.
No, that's a very good question. Vern Cron, for the record, senior park planner. The intent right now is that we'll fence that park. It is going to be a dog park, not a hybrid park between a playground and, no, it's going to be a dog park. That's the intent. So,
with all the kids and all in the houses and the apartments, it's going to, okay.
Yeah, there's a great need in this community for an off-leash dog parks, and this is one of our opportunities to be able to do that. Plus, as Hope mentioned, that it's a great opportunity for the city to partner with the animal services facility just right across the street. So we really see this as a great opportunity to provide an amenity that not only the city needs, but a number of residents who will probably be living in this development as well, and the neighborhoods to the north and east has the ability to bring their dogs there without having to drive to Fuji or some other spot. So,
well, we have you here. Why don't, is there any other questions as far as Parks and Rec go to save Fern jumping back and forth and coming up? Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Questions for the applicant?
Commissioner Doors, I have a question actually to kind of bring it back to staff real quick. Speaking of what Hope kind of brought up, the Millard subdivision from years ago, they were actually supposed to, and in a meeting much like this, they were directed and required to raise and fill and raise their houses up above grade. I think it was 3 feet additionally. I'm not implying that wouldn't happen if someone were to put that requirement forth. But I'm wondering for the city, if we, with these requirements of fill and keeping, you know, things above the floodplain, how are we going to make sure, how is it regulated or supervised throughout the building process to make sure that it's being done? Because what happened was in Hope's neighborhood, they just didn't do it. And now everyone either has a new boat or a sump pump. So, how do we make sure that's going down?
Stephen, again, with Development Engineering. So we don't have that final geotechnical analysis on this part of the project. On the west side, we had that, and groundwater wasn't identified as a potential issue, but we did have the same concerns with the flood elevations. So we required them to give us a map that showed contours of 2 feet above base flood elevation across the entire subdivision, regardless of how close they were to the channels. We'll be looking at the same type of thing on this side also with the flood elevations. And then, again, we'll rely on the recommendations of the geotechnical engineer as far as construction and fill.
In other words, when they come in with their report, they'll take the highest level that's been whatever expected, recorded, whatever, and they have to go to 2 feet minimum above that?
Correct, yeah. So we have the grading plans that show what the finish grades are of the building pads and compare that to the contours of the 2 feet above base flood.
Yeah, that does answer my question. It's just, for the record, it's just a concerning area. I think most people who live in Carson know what it looks like when it rains over there. And, I mentioned Hope earlier, there seems to be more concern from city as well. There's a lot of, I alluded to this with her earlier, there's a lot of clauses and statements in here about HOA maintaining standing groundwater, helicopters coming in to abate mosquitoes. So it's not, I'm glad to see that it is a concern all around. It's, you know, we're all for building. It's just, I guess this is like the definition of what we're here to really make sure is safe, sustainable, healthy, all of the above.
Sure, and if I can just add to that, I think, you know, obviously it's a concern from us, from our engineers and everything else, just on a basic liability standpoint, and that's part of the reason we've worked so long and hard, and we know there's more studies to come, but I think at the end of the day, hopefully this, we, with some of the improvements that are going here, can solve some overall, even regional issues that are occurring over there now. So it might be, you know, and to put some of the maintenance burden onto a homeowners association off of the city, I think is another benefit.
Other questions for the applicant? Thank you. Oh, hang on, Commissioner Preston.
The question that I have is, I know that when we discussed surface property back a couple of weeks ago, we talked about disclosures. And one of the things with this particular property, because my family developed the property to the north, is the prior sewer retention ponds. And I was out there the other day on Warm Springs on another errand, and it was warm, and you had O'Day, you know, sewer pond smell. Is that something that you've gone ahead and put into consideration on this? Because that, where that was all a, how about a really kind of hokey recharge area? So.
We are aware of that, and I believe there's a condition that actually from the health department requiring that disclosures are made to all the home, the new, with the sales of the property, that that would be a disclosure in there.
Opening up for public comment. Would you like to come forward, please? Just state your name for the record. And
hi. Jeanette Glauner, homeowner. When you talked about that water and the pump, I'm about 5 feet above Lampa East, what they want to plan to build. I'm about 5 feet higher than that ground. And my sump pump goes off quite a bit during, starting about now until when summer hits and it finally dries out. So it's a huge issue. I spoke with my insurance for homeowners. They said likely my insurance would go up because we just got off of the flood zone just a few years ago. And if with all the building and the water levels do change like that. And if they're planning to build 2 feet or put a 2 feet pad on there, are they going to go higher than that? I mean, are they going to come as high as I am? Then therefore there's going to be like a culvert because it does flood there anytime it rains heavy. That's one worry I have is that. Also, I read in that one packet, which we didn't have, they said that they'd work from 7 to 7. Are they going to be out there in the middle of the night watering on a windy day? Because right now the wind is horrible and the dust is horrible on a normal day in Nevada, and if they're going to tear all that out, all the vegetation, the wind is going to be horrible against us because our house faces east, or excuse me, my house faces west, so I get all of that wind and the dirt. And right now, whatever they're doing on the Lampa over by Menlo area is just dirt, and I'm around the corner from all those apartments. Then also, I was probably advised that my property value will probably go down because they're going to start putting apartments in. So I'm going to be right at that first street. Traffic is busy now. I worry about the roundabout because they don't even stop at the three-way traffic stop sign that we have. So it's a concern. All the wildlife that's there. It's nice to see the coyotes out and about in that area. I hate to see all that stuff go along with the birds and whatnot, so the owls that are in the neighborhood. It's just nice to have that, and it is a wetlands, and I thought that that's what it was supposed to be all the time, is wetlands. I'm all for the dog park. That is needed. It's up that way. It's above ground, higher than what we are. So I think that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Comments. If you'd like to come forward, if you can.
I'm Frank Pollock. I've lived in that area for about a quarter century. My kids went to school. I was in the military, and because I was in the Army, the Navy thought I made a nice policeman. So I have a big concern about traffic flows. Who is going to pay for it? I'll start at the south end. When people come up from 5th Street, going through Beauty Airport Road, that traffic intersection, I've seen very many near misses. Who's going to pay for that intersection? Because they can't just have a stop sign. They're going to have major problems. Ask your sheriff how many times he comes on a traffic collision. You have to have a good roundabout there or a traffic signal, and a roundabout's less expensive. The next one up is Desatoya. At Desatoya, because of the topographic features there and the road, you can't see when you're making a left turn. I open my window up, which is something I was trained to do when I was on patrol, so I can hear the car before I see it. Again, ask the sheriff, how many times has he been out there for a traffic collision? Who's going to pay for that roundabout, and where are you going to put it? Or are you going to put a stop sign there and have everybody blow through it? Think about the traffic implications. How are people going to get to where they're going? And will they listen to what is common sense? Or are they going to be trying to get to work at the last minute? The second thing I'm going to talk about is the water issue here. Anybody who lives out there enjoys seeing the ducks. We've got ducks in water. That entire area is made up of ponds where the water settles and waits until it has a chance to drain downstream. You're going to have a problem if you get a lot of rain come through by the water plant where that stream is and have it come all at once because you paved over that area. You have to provide some way of mitigating the water flow. I'm used to one coming from the north, and we finally fixed that thing with some traffic mitigation by the gold dust. But now you're going to have more water coming in from the areas around Kings Canyon and the west side of the city. The Lampa family has an absolute right to build something there so long as they don't flood us or cause major traffic problems.
Is that all, sir?
Huh?
Did you have additional comments?
No, I'm waiting for you to ask.
Okay, what will happen is the commission will take public comment, and when they're done taking public comment, they'll either answer your questions or they'll ask me and my colleagues to answer your questions.
Fine, I don't know the rules of the game.
No problem, sir. Thank you for your comments. Additional public comment?
Hello, my name is Alex Echo, and I own some
units at the Sierra View Condominium Association, which is just north of where this is going in. And I hate to be redundant, but I know other people are talking about water table and pumping, and we've got some pumps throughout the association there that we're running all the time to try to keep our water level down. And if we're talking about this development having 2 feet higher on the ground, what will that do to our groundwater? Will it make it go higher? And some of our groundwater just naturally flows to this property because that is the downhill way for it to go. And what's going to happen to that? Is that going to affect our natural flow of the water, which would exacerbate our water table problems and flooding problems? And the other question I have is, we're talking about an HOA to maintain the water drainage facilities here, but then we're also talking about apartments. Apartments generally don't have HOAs, so are these eightplexes and fourplexes, are they going to be apartments or condominiums where people can buy them, or are they just going to be apartments just for rent? So, and the other question on that is, you know, people talk about property values. Well, our Sierra View condominiums, they're all pretty much 1,200 square feet, 2 and 3 bedrooms, somewhere around 1,300 square feet. Now, you're packing a lot of eightplexes and a couple of fourplexes in that area. Any idea what the square footage of those apartment units are going to be and what kind of rents they're going to have? Just trying to get a feel for what the neighborhood's going to turn into there. So I'd like to find out more about that. And also, I noticed the lot sizes for the houses are pretty small. Those houses are going to be two-story or one-story. And same with the apartments. By looking at this mailer I got here with a magnifying glass, it looks like they're going to be two-story to squeeze in there. So are those going to be two-story also? Because, you know, that does a... I know it's an aesthetic thing, and we can't have any say about it, I guess, but it does affect the nice view we have from the Sierra View condominiums, where you can see the wide open fields and why they call it Sierra View. It's going to turn into the apartment view condominiums. So are they two-story? I'd like to get a confirmation on that. It kind of looks like they're going to be. The other thing I was wondering is... what's the timeline on this? It sounds like a lot of this is going to be contingent on engineering studies and drainage studies and everything else going to be okay. If everything goes according to what everybody's planning on, when will they start actually putting foundations in and putting the buildings up? And is it going to be built in phases? What's going to go first? Is it going to be the apartments first, the houses first? Are you going to blitz them all, or are you going to build some, see if they fill, and then build some more? The reason I'm asking is because it looks like there's a lot of new apartment and single-family home construction getting ready to start happening in Carson. And is this going to make a glut and overflow where you just have, you know, more supply than demand? You're saying no, you don't think it'll overdo that, huh? Anyway, I'd like to get that answered if somebody can. And on the houses. Any idea of what the price range would be on them? And if the apartments are condos and not just rental apartments, any idea what the price range would be on them too? So I know that's a lot of stuff, and I hope I get some of these things answered. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Questions? Other public comment? Come forward and state your name for the record.
Kyra Hinton, homeowner. I'm also right on Airport, and my house also faces the development area. As well as all of the other concerns, I also work from home, and so there's already traffic and noise and yelling and trash and debris from the construction that's already going on with the pipeline. So my concern is also with that and the noise. I know that there's a couple other homeowners that work at night and sleep during the day, so that's a big concern for us as well.
Thank you. Any additional public comment? Seeing none, we'll bring it back. Hope, would you like to tackle a few of those?
Sure. Okay.
And again, I'm actually sort of happy because we've been at this for a year. I mean, this is such a difficult site. So I so appreciate everything I'm hearing, and I so appreciate my colleagues because I can look at this report and I can find how it's being handled, which is good. In terms of the water level, one of my favorite conditions of approval in this entire staff report is number 57. What it says is the site improvement drainage study must demonstrate the ability of downstream drainage facilities to handle the increased runoff if detention is not used. It is so important to understand how this water is going to be handled. I mean, that's so basic and so critical on this site. Do we know all the answers yet? No, we don't. They're going to have to come up with another drainage study. Stephen outlined the credentials of the engineer who will perform it. But we need to make sure that if they're not having detention on site, that all downstream facilities can accommodate the flow and we're not compromising another property. In terms of the dust, water for dust brought up, condition number 14, it talks about that the applicant has to obtain a dust control permit from NDEP, which is a state agency, and the site grading must incorporate proper dust control and erosion control measures. Jeanette also talked about the wetlands. If we look at condition number 58, we note that we need a statement from the Army Corps of Engineers because they will take jurisdiction over the wetlands as to whether or not mitigation is necessary for the wetlands shown on the delineation report. Traffic. Conditions, and again, I go back to what the chairman said to me in my office. He said, why are there so many conditions? Because we look so carefully at this because we are so concerned. Traffic is conditions number 43 through 56. We have, what does that make it, like 9 conditions on traffic. The hours are identified in condition 12, construction hours, and I think that speaks to what Kyra had asked about as well. In the city, the construction hours are 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, so there wasn't a question about that. Frank brought up the traffic, and he started at the south end of 5th Street. He then talked to us about what's happening at the intersection of Airport and Budai, and they talked about the intersection of Airport and Desatoya. If we look at condition 45, we see that we're looking to have, it says based on the roundabout benefit analysis, and I think Frank, you did say don't put a stop sign there, they're going to drive right through it, put in a roundabout. Condition 45 says based on the roundabout benefit analysis and the predicted levels of service and the transportation analysis, roundabouts will be required at Desatoya and Airport Road, Budai Way and Airport Road, and 5th Street and Airport Road. So we hit every single intersection you called out. Frank also talked about the ponds and the ducks and the water. If we look at conditions 57 through 65, those are all addressing the flood and storm drainage program. Alex, you talked about the water table and the sump pumps and the natural flow. Again, I'll go back to that condition 57. They have to either have detention on site or they're going to have to demonstrate that the downstream facilities can accommodate their drainage. They cannot compromise other properties. Right now, to the best of my understanding, and Mike Rayleigh can speak to this, if he'll need to speak to some of this, they will be apartments, not condominiums. They are not being entitled because of the very questions you're asking. We don't have the level of detail to review the apartment complex. It's helpful to have it on this map because it helps us understand the utility demand. It helps us understand transportation. It helps us understand the road network. But we don't have the level of detail that we need to be able to say this apartment complex is approved. So I can't speak to the size of the apartments. I can't speak to the massing. I can't speak to the timeline, except to say that a tentative map is only alive, if you will, for 4 years, and then it expires. The Planning Commission is being asked to make a recommendation to the board, so the clock starts ticking at the time of board action. They then have 4 years. These conditions you have in front of you are basically all the conditions that need to be met when these construction documents come in. The staff members are going to go through all these conditions and make sure every single construction document is consistent with these conditions of approval. So that's why we have these conditions. And in terms of pricing houses, I don't know. Mike Rayleigh may know. I don't know. And I think I responded to everything, but this is why it took us so long to review this project.
Number 57, does that include water table rise, getting rid of that water as well, or is it just, does that fall under that same condition?
Stephen Pote of Development Engineering. That's specific to the floodplain and also any storm runoff, making sure that the downstream has capacity for that. As far as the water table, again, that's going to be dependent on the recommendations of the geotechnical engineer.
Thank you.
Commissioner Doors, on number 58, when we're talking about the Army Corps of Engineers, I'll just read it. A statement must be provided from the Army Corps as to what mitigation is necessary for the small patch of wetlands that is shown in the delineation report, and Army Corps approval must be obtained if necessary. Is that I'm unfamiliar with how deep they go, so to speak, in what they're recommending or requiring. Are they just going to look at the wetlands and say, okay, as long you can build here, you got the water out of the wetlands? Or are they going to look at things like what the community is asking about as far as where is this water going and how is it affecting the table around?
So my understanding is that the Army Corps typically, if they do require mitigation, if a subdivision is going to move a wetland, they'll require you to actually replace it and ensure that it's going to last for an indefinite amount of time. You can't just build on top of a wetland and get rid of it because it's a habitat for a lot of different species.
Hello, Commissioner Doors?
I do have one more. I think Jeanette was her name. She mentioned the dog park is higher than the rest of it. Is that accurate? Is the dog park park land higher than the rest of the development?
I've gotten her feet wet.
Again, Vern Cron, senior park planner. The current land where the dog park is going to be is higher than the rest of the development. But when you look at the grading plan, the park will be lower than where it is currently. And by the time they get done grading and moving things around, the park is going to be lower than Butt Eye Way.
And will it be used as a retention?
No. That was very clear to the applicant very early in the process. It's not going to be a flood retention facility. It's not going to have water running through it. It is not intended to be any kind of a detention facility. The intent is that it will be a completely, the land will be completely usable as a park versus sharing a detention basin with it.
With parking spaces, et cetera,
yes,
in the
correct.
Park for people that use it and paved and whatever.
Correct.
Is it possible that the geotechnical analysis is going to show that the water level is, or the water table is too high to build on?
Stephen Pote again. Typically, what the geotechnical engineer will do is make a recommendation for what would be required to construct. So often you'll see extra excavation and engineered backfill being placed, as well as additional fill to get up above areas that aren't suitable for construction.
What is the impact of additional fill on an existing on the water table directly below that? Does additional fill displace water in the water table?
So since the fill is not impervious, it will allow water to pass through it, so the water table will be able to be where it was in the past. The concern that the geotechnical engineer will have is having the bearing capacity for the homes, the roads, that sort of thing, making sure it can handle the weight.
So it is possible that the geotechnical report could indicate that it's not adequate for the weight that will be placed on that.
Correct. So they'll look at the native soils and give recommendations for any additional construction that needs to take place in order to make it suitable, yes.
So they've come this far, and they haven't done soils analysis yet to determine that they can build there?
They provided us a preliminary study where they looked at previous geotechnical engineering studies in the area and also maps that the USGS provides of different soil types as well as fault lines.
So theoretically, they could come in and say you have to put 12 feet of fill in there in order to make it sustainable, to, you know, whatever. And at some point, maybe they determine they can't build it.
My question basically has to do with the amount of impervious surface, because I'm seeing a lot of impervious surface and a lot of aprons for parking, yet I'm not seeing parking that would seem to be adequate. If you have these additional houses, I'm only seeing two parking spaces per house, and typically you would have some type of off-street parking, but there is no off-street parking that's really allowed. In addition to that, the apartments don't seem, they seem to be pretty close on parking too. And so if you have, for instance, a two or three bedroom house, you may have 3 to 4 to 5 vehicles. I'm not seeing some guest parking available on that. The other question I would say is that in regards to the geotechnical on this, is given the impervious surfaces on there, would there be a possibility that you would actually be looking at putting in some additional wells and so forth like that underground as far as stormwater in with your C90 type things and send it off that way?
So on the stormwater question, probably what you'd end up seeing is less detention rather than what you're referring to, the well to help it infiltrate, just because of the proximity to the creek, which then goes to the river. When you have a big storm event with the downs, this is being so close to the river, we want to get that water to the river as quickly as possible. Otherwise, as the storm comes down, it'll compound. So.
So if you are bringing in however much fill, is there going to be compaction done prior to construction so that everything has settled to the level that it needs to, so it's not like I'm going to bring in 12 feet of fill and then, you know, 3 months from now I'm going to start building? Are you planning on, if that is needed, to do the compaction that needs to be done prior to starting to build?
Again, yeah. So that's one of our development standards, is that when fill's placed, it does have to be compacted to a specific percentage.
Commissioner Doors, is there a reason why, and I'm sorry I keep bringing it back to this, it's just I can't seem to wrap my head around it. So it's a two-part question. Is there a reason why the dog park was designed to be in a place that is initially at least higher than the rest of the project? And then the next portion of that question is there another reason why it's not being used as retention? I've been in plenty of neighborhoods where they'd use parks as retention during flood times, and here in town and all over. So I'm wondering why we didn't utilize that and why we didn't seemingly reverse it.
No, they're good questions. Part of the reason for the three-acre park being where located where it was at is because of the relationship to the animal services facility. We wanted to have an intact piece of property, usable 3 acres. What we learned, a very hard lesson in the floods of 2017, that a lot of our parks that have been used as a dual facility took a beating. And so we're trying to see if we can approach it a little differently. And that's one of the reasons why you don't see in this particular case it being used as a detention facility. Does that help?
It helps. It answers my question. I don't know that I agree, but it answers my question. Yes, that answers my question from your perspective. And I guess, is there any city perspective on why we did it? Is there any benefit for it being laid out the way it is versus us trying it the other.
The engineer just mentioned the fact they want to get that water moving through and off. They don't want to detain it on the property because it's fairly close to the river to get it down to the river and out of there.
So just to piggyback on that statement, isn't it possible to, you can put that retention anywhere and use a storm drain system to drain it out, unless I'm mistaken. So if we could just clarify those things.
Again, well, first I'm going to do something easy. Commissioner Preston, you asked about parking. I've just verified the streets, the interior street system accommodates on-street parking on one side. So I wanted that clarity. So. Okay, in terms of the park, going back the past year, what are the three things we struggled with? Every meeting was the same three things. The park, stormwater and floodplain, and transportation. So you're asking about two of the three things we struggled with so much. And one of Rob Fellows isn't here tonight. He's our stormwater manager for the city. Something he kept saying is we need to know the volume of water. Until we know the volume of water that we have to address, we can't even start looking at a stormwater program or how to manage the floodplain. We finally got in that letter from House Morin information that made Rob Fellows comfortable that we finally had a framework to address stormwater. We have a puzzle here because the other piece of the puzzle is the three-acre park. The Parks and Rec Director wants a functional park and wants a position near the animal, the Humane Society facility. There was nothing in our meetings where internally you have Dirk Goring looking out for transportation, you have Vern Cron looking out for the trail system and the parks and recreational component of it, you had Rob Fellows and Stephen Pote looking out for the stormwater and the floodplain. At no point did anyone say the placement of that park at that location is going to be a fatal flaw in addressing this drainage issue and the floodplain issue. So Rob and Stephen were perfectly aware of the Parks and Recreation Department's position that this park was not going to be a de facto drainage basin. It was going to be a functional area for the dogs. So that's a non-technical response as somebody who sat through all those meetings. But I think what I'm hearing is, are we hurting the project by not allowing the park to be a drainage basin? And having sat in the meeting with a bunch of engineers over and over again, I don't believe we are. I think they can address the stormwater and the drainage without utilizing the park to as a detention basin.
Any other questions? Any other public comment? You'd have to come forward, ma'am. And so they can get it on the record.
Jeanette Lawner, homeowner. You had mentioned parking, but yet there is no parking on the I-Face West. So where's the parking going to be? I've already lost parking due to the bus system that's come through, which I'm okay with because it's busing and it helps everybody. But I only have two spots. So if there's parking, where is that going to be if there's no parking along Airport?
The proposed homes will front on interior roadways, which will be, with the exception of Lampa, local roads. And so it will be a traditional house that has a driveway to accommodate two cars. And on the internal street system, there will be parking on one side of the street. So I anticipate it will be like a traditional local road, whereas Airport Road's probably a designated, I'm looking at their collector. And so because it's designated as a collector, it's designed to carry traffic as opposed to simply access property, recognizing there are houses on Airport Road that and you do have driveways. So
yes.
So we're aware of that. But, yeah, we don't anticipate that, and that's another thing with the dog park. You'll see in the conditions of approval, the Parks and Rec Department is recommending, I believe, parking. I can look it up. I believe it's for 20 to 25 vehicles because they don't want the spillover onto Airport Road. So we've tried to address everything we can think of. there is a mandate for dust control, and because of that mandate, it's a state regulation, the Nevada Department of Environmental Protection. I would anticipate dust happens all the time, right? And so if we need a truck out there at 8 o'clock to control dust, I would expect the truck is out there at 8 o'clock to control dust. Again, the water truck's not noisy. It's spraying water.
I'm worried about my vehicles being pitted with all the dirt and everything. Once they take all the vegetation away, how much more? Because right now it's open land and there is vegetation, and when the wind comes up and whips, we do get dirt and we do get pitted. So that's one of my concerns also about the vehicles.
Mr. Chair, if I may, we do have a condition. I'm not going to find it fast enough. But it's actually a boilerplate condition that comes right out of the code. And it prohibits the mass grading of land when you have a tentative map and you're preparing the land for development. You are not allowed to do mass grading. You may only grade that area where there will be immediate development to avoid the very thing Jeanette just described, and to have areas that aren't just sitting there ready for erosion and mud and dust. But nobody's doing anything. You get to disturb the land when you're ready to develop it. But you don't get to disturb the land and let it sit in a disturbed state for a long period of time if you're not ready to develop.
No more public comment. We'll bring it back for further. Oh.
No, I have a comment.
Commissioner, we'll bring it back for. Okay.
Frank Palu, I forgot to mention why watching the ducks was so important. There is a government agency, I forgot its name, that takes care of the flyway. Anytime you reduce marshland or wetlands, you reduce feed for the ducks, the geese, and all the others. Has the developer asked permission to affect the migration patterns?
That would come from the Corps of Engineers study, I believe, would cover that, because they're in charge of the wetlands. So the Corps of Engineers, before they would release that land, would have looked at that or considered that. So.
I'm talking about hunting regulations and hunting.
You can't hunt that close in town anyway. I used to duck hunt myself. So.
I know, but their marshlands are cared for by another agency because of the requirements for feed and water and resting places.
I believe the developer will be required to meet all state, local, and federal codes before doing anything and adhere to all recommendations, assuming approval.
Right, because you're talking about moving the water as fast as possible. Thank you.
Bring it back for further discussion and then possibly a motion, whatever. Commissioner Monroy.
Thank you, Chair. Elise Monroy for the record. So I just wanted to take a little bit of privilege, since it's my last meeting, to hop on a soapbox that I haven't been on in a while, but I've been carrying since 2015. So I just want to say that I really appreciate the thoroughness of which the planning staff and everybody worked on this. I really appreciate, it's clear from the attendance here tonight, but also the conditions, that there's been a lot of input from various divisions within the city, and I think that's how, if we have that cross collaboration, I think that's how we get to good policy. However, what is not here, which we talked about earlier in the meeting, is comments from the school district. So, again, this is my last meeting. I feel like I've been trying to advocate for more input from the school district since 2015. I can't speak for the rest of the commissioners, but for me, it gets harder and harder to approve these, knowing that there's more development happening by right and feeling like the school district is not necessarily silent, but not coming forward really with plans to address, whether it be more schools or bonding or population, school population. So I don't know if there's a way that that can be addressed through joint meetings with the school district or the bonding committee, or if there's a way that the Board of Supervisors can help in this. But this is just one of the last things I want to say, because it's I don't want to say it's frustrating, but it's hard to know that it's been, I've now finished my four-year term, and it doesn't feel like we're in a better place about schools and about development and schools. So but I do leave knowing that there are really strong advocates for this issue in Commissioner Tingle, Commissioner Borders, Commissioner Sattler, and I'm sure Commissioner Doerr's here. So I'm glad about that, but I just wanted to make sure that was on the record as I depart. Thank you.
I appreciate that, and unfortunately, we have had, you know, a couple presentations from the school, and they explain how, what they're going to shift here, do that. And that's why I bring up each time these come up to Commissioner, or to Hope, that they have been contacted. I wish they did respond more. But in this case, at least they're going to get some investment money, hopefully, and property build another school on, which I think is good. But you have awakened us to that in your 4 years here.
And I gave you guys no choice.
Yes, kind of. To where, as I say, as long as I'm chair, whatever, I want to keep bringing that to keep it on the record. But it is important to us, and mm-hmm. and staff has done a good job of contacting them, mm-hmm. and as to how often they get back with us is kind of up to them as well. Comments or a motion?
Yeah, I'll get on my soapbox.
Okay, this is your
being
last
my
meeting.
Last meeting. And this is a very general statement, but it applies to this project. And I recognize that engineers can do almost anything they can conceive of, having redirecting water and dealing with hydrology. But I am very much opposed to the idea of just because you can fill a wetland or you can change a floodplain, that you should do it. And this is one of those cases where I'm not convinced that there is enough information at this point to go ahead and say, yeah, this project should go forward. We think, you know, whatever you can do with the wetland or the floodplain, that's fine. I just don't think that there's enough information here to make that decision.
But in essence, we're approving the PUD going forward, but they have to still meet all the guidelines.
Yeah, but you're still impacting the wetland or the floodplain.
I understand what you're saying now. Okay.
I just don't think that it's good public policy in the long run to eliminate a floodplain just because you can move that water somewhere else.
Additional comments or a motion? I'll try a motion, I guess. I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of the tentative plan unit development TPUD-18-010 based on the ability to make the required findings and subject to the conditions of approval as noted in the staff report for the Planning Commission with the modification of number 65. I just make that motion at this point. Second.
I'll second it.
We have a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
4-2. Are opposed.
Yes. First of all, to Commissioner Monroy and Commissioner Eswine, I really enjoyed working with both of you. I'm sad to see you both leaving the commission, so I want to say that for sure. We do have a meeting on the 30th. Commissioners Monroy and Eswine won't be joining us. But we do have a meeting on the 30th. I can't remember everything that's on it. I know we have a special use permit for a cell tower. We have a special use permit for some hillside development. We have a special use permit for an RV park behind Sassafras. I feel like there's a couple other items. I'm just not thinking of them right now. And I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Right under commissioner reports, I would like to take this opportunity. Commissioner Eswine joined this commission in October of 2011, about 9 months or 10 months after I was appointed to it, and I've appreciated working with him, and coming from his planning background, he's been a tremendous help to me as far as understanding and learning how, what to do, and that sort of thing. So, and also with Commissioner Monroy, I appreciate what you have brought, your enthusiasm and interest, and we have a good mix of commissioners, and I guess we're going to have a couple more coming on board soon, and next month is also, or the end of the month will be the elections as well, so for our, because we moved back to January, so now the elections move to January, so anyway, we'll discuss that at that time. But again, thank you both for your service, and it's been a pleasure working with you both. Any other comments from commissioners? Public comment at this point. If anyone wishes to comment from the public, seeing none, I'll take a motion for